Start our meeting and hope people drift in. With that, I'd ask for a motion to approve the minutes from our meeting on the 14th.
So move.
It's been moved by Stabler. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Marley. Is there discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Good sign. Thank you. We're now at the point where we continue our discussions. We would invite any public testimony, just in the spirit of amity, comity, and harmony, and openness. We're wide open. We're public. Greetings, Representative Earhart.
Well, you're open, so I can come today.
Wide open. Wide open. And any public testimony today? If not, we will continue our discussion from the other day. I'll lead off, if I may, and chime in at any point, please. My thought today is that we have a succinct set of recommendations to our sponsors. And hopefully we can move through it with relative speed. We've invited input from a whole variety of people, public and council members. Some members have taken the opportunity to submit ideas to Greg. You've all had them to consider. I always tell people, no idea is a bad idea for about 60 seconds. we hope that everything we do is in the spirit of being constructive here and nonpartisan as we forward a set of recommendations to the legislature. You all had a copy of the document prepared and submitted in our last cycle. And my thought, unless there are strong opinions to the contrary, is that we follow that same format as we submit materials to the legislature. And if you look at that document, you all were sent a copy. It's signed by our colleague, Tom Swain, and it's dated March 10, 2005. And there's a discussion of history, of pay practices. Well, there is a little debate. One of my favorite quotes from our country is from President Adams, "Facts are stubborn things." Hopefully there's not much debate about the facts here. I think that document does a pretty good summary of the distance traveled on pay practices. And then if you get to the second page, there are a series of recommendations. Our legislative charge is for the governor, legislators, judges, and agency heads. And as we discussed in our last meeting, the knee bone is connected to the shin bone. And a number of public officials' salaries are linked to the governor's salary. So if we do something in one place under current law, it has an impact on others. So those are my thoughts before we get going. Anyone want to chime in on a general thought process that went into our last document? A number of us were on that council at the time. It was a good product. Not all of us agreed with everything, but again, Chairman Swain brought us to consensus on a number of items. In other items, there was not consensus.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
I like your suggestion for the format, and we'll obviously be debating the specific recommendations. Point of process, would we all get a copy of the proposed final letter before it is actually sent off? because it strikes me some of the numbers, even in the intro, will need to change, given that 2 years has passed.
I think I'd be reluctant to send out something without everyone getting a crack at it.
Thank you.
Albeit quickly. The LCC has a lot going on, so we don't want to bog them down.
Absolutely.
And so whatever we do today, I would ask people to review and respond if they have any concerns or questions in relatively short order. In the favor world, that's about 24 hours in the email universe. And absent an objection, we assume there are none. How's that?
Works for me.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what's our deadline insofar as legislative effectiveness? What needs to be done in order to have any kind of impact? By what time?
Well, I think we agreed that the sooner the better, just by virtue of legislative activity. I know one of the committees passed judges' salaries today, so that, but it was only in one house. I can't remember. Was it the House or the Senate?
Senate.
So that if we're to have any utility, and that's part of the problem with the way this is constituted, time is of the essence.
Yeah.
If we're to have any useful impact, we have to be pretty quick about it.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Earhart.
The House is meeting to discuss and pass the capital investment bill tonight, 6 o'clock. Are we anywhere near the ability to get done somewhere around that time?
I would hope and expect.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Did Greg, did you have any opportunity to look at or the LCC to look at the total impact of salaries, et cetera, that our recommendations would impact?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sable, I did not do those calculations. I didn't have a sense what we were going to be doing here, so I didn't do that exercise.
Mr. Chairman, I have another question. I suggested that the possibility of getting someone from the Transportation Department to talk about compression at the top. And I don't know what were the result of that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, we contacted the Department of Employee Relations to ask them to determine how many state employees are at or near the salaries of their agency heads. They gave us some data that indicated that approximately 83 employees were at or near their agency head. I believe there were either seven or 11 employees at the Department of Transportation that were at that point.
Are we going to have testimony then, Mr. Chairman, from the woman who said that there was no compression going on? Or?
Probably not.
All right, thank you.
We'll note it for the record.
Okay.
That there were people at the top of the range.
Mr. Chairman, do we have a quorum yet?
We do, if my count is right. We sure do.
Not sure what your disposition is, but if there's, let me be so bold as to suggest we start with the judiciary.
Great. That would be terrific. And since you're from the judicial group, you have some thoughts there?
Well, I think in terms of submission, Mr. Chairman, my colleague from the judiciary, Mr. Stanek, presented the suggestion. May I defer to him, please?
Sure.
Mr. Chair?
Sure. Mr. Stanek.
If it please the chair, I would like to move my recommendation.
It's been moved by Stanek. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Christensen. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
I could just speak briefly to this issue. This is the recommendation that was submitted to us by the courts and supported by the State Bar Association in their testimony at our last meeting. I think if we look at the history of the Compensation Council, there is much about the history of it that has underperformed expectation. But I think one area where in recent years we have made some progress is in regular modest increases in judicial pay. I think that I won't regurgitate the testimony that was provided by the representatives of the judicial branch, but I think it is important that we keep with the progress that we've been making in this area. I think these are reasonable increases. I think it also speaks to some type of process going forward. We have a good judiciary in the state of Minnesota, and I think in order to maintain the quality of the judiciary and make sure we're getting the right candidates and keeping the right people on the bench, this is an important move in the right direction. And so I won't go through the details. I think that we've had a chance to review it, but I think this is a reasonable approach to the judiciary.
Is there additional discussion? John?
Clarification, I guess, in terms of it appears that there's a note here to index this secondary increase to something that begets to the collective bargaining agreement, or possibly a clarification as to the indexing be to the, say, the CPI, something of that nature. And I'm wondering which I would certainly want to distinguish between those two.
Can you tell me? I can't remember.
In the recommendation, maybe look for one of those.
Mr. Stanek.
I wonder if it might be appropriate to ask Ms. Niren to speak to this.
Sure.
The language that is submitted and they have in front of you is not just the traditional cost of living consumer price index language. And I think Ms. Niren is probably in the best position to walk us through to answer Mr. Stabler's inquiry. If she doesn't break the microphone.
We're awake.
Mr. Chair. That's
one way to get attention.
Sorry about that. Mr. Chair, Sandy Niren on behalf of the Minnesota District Judges Association. If you're referring to the amendment that we requested at the last meeting, what that basically does is give judges two exact raises of 5% this July, next July, and then in July of 2009 and 2010, we are respectfully requesting to be tied to the union negotiations and whatever outcome they have. And this is similar to a formula that we used and was recommended by this council back in, I think it was 1997. Also tied to a formula for, I think it was 99 and 2000. Is that correct, Greg? So this is a slightly different drafted language, but it's fairly close to the same thing. And we'd prefer that to a CPI. I think we'd like to be tied to the unions. For years, we have said over here that the judges would be more than happy to be tied to what the unions negotiate. They do a very good job. It was stated to me in committee this morning when I testified in Senate committee that maybe the judges should form a union and then they wouldn't have so much trouble getting pay raises. I told them I would pass on that suggestion.
No, it's not in this way.
Well, my concern in that regard, then, is that it would appear in terms of the context of our flavoring is that then we are taking the judges who are acknowledged as professionals, are truly professionals in our society, and then we are putting them on the same plane or the same status as our labor union workers in and around the state, and particularly those who are in governmental service, and that would bother me some.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stabler, we have historically said that we think judges probably should be treated more similarly to full-time career professionals in the state than elected officials who come in and out of service for a short period of time. Usually when a judge takes a bench, they stay there until retirement age. And so we think if you're going to compare them to anybody, it's better to compare them to those who are here for their careers rather than coming in and out of elective office. Judges are a little unusual. They're elected officials, but they're not politicians, and they're truly probably more appropriately treated like full-time state employees.
Is there other discussion? If not, we've attempted to operate on consensus, but I want to be respectful of the varying points of view in our group. So I'll just say, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion carries. With that,
Chair?
Yeah.
How about the legislature next?
That's terrific. A variety of you took the opportunity to chime in with regard to possible changes in legislative pay. And each one of the people who had a proposal are present, and we'll take them and know in the order we've got them. Let's not prejudge any of them. Representative Atkins, do you want to talk about your proposal?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. And by the way, I intended that to apply to both the legislators and constitutional officers. What it indicates is a 3% and 3%, and it was more to spur on the discussion towards something that is realistic and doable. In frankness, but with all due respect to this group, the recommendations from this group have not been highly valued. Maybe they've been highly valued, they just haven't been followed. I think the bottom line is you just sort of suck it up and be realistic, and so you're not going to be able to catch up with where you think the I know there was a recommendation on the governor's salary that it go to, I think, $137,000 and change, and I'm not necessarily averse to that, but I don't think it's going to get done. And you tie the legislative salaries at 33% of the governor's salary, and that's probably realistic in terms of what the position is worth, but I don't think it's realistic in terms of the politics of getting it done. So what's realistic? Probably something that Joe Sixpack, who carries a lunchbox to work, is looking at. Maybe 2% or 3%. We're talking two-year package. What I've heard out there, to the extent anybody is getting raises at all, it's been something like 3%, 3 and 3, or 2.5 and 2.5. So that's why I wanted to make sure that that was at least on the table for some discussion. That said, I supported the judicial increase because if you look at that market in particular, it's going to get tougher and tougher to get. Shoot, we got first-year associates starting at $120K. It'll be awfully hard to get any kind of qualified candidates to seek a judicial appointment in the context that we're in right now. Final point is that said, legislators and constitutional officers generally do not run for office for the pay. And so I don't think whether it's 3% or 2% or 5% that that's necessarily going to be what drives them to run for office and do a good job in that office. But you want to find something that is reasonably doable. And I think something in the neighborhood of 3 and 3 is probably where there might be an appetite for it.
Okay. I think we'll just take these in order on our draft that we circulated. Is there a discussion? Let's do it all at one time. Go ahead, Mr. Stabler.
I would request that under our votes going forward that we do a roll call vote, please.
Okay. So noted. And we will do so. Mr. Swain, do you want to talk about your proposal?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Actually, it isn't mine. Turns out that it was advanced 2 years ago by a legislator member, but I thought it had lots of merit, and that's why I've repeated it this go-around.
Refresh my memory. Who was it?
Senator Ortman, as I remember.
Okay.
Am I right on that, Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Swain, I believe that's correct.
Yeah. Because we had much of the same discussion that we are engaging in now. The last time legislative salaries were adjusted, I think, was 1999. And again, I understand the reality of politics, but the purpose of this council was to take a look at reality, the marketplace, and by statute, try to determine what the job is worth and seek to at least ignore the element of practical politics, something I know that's difficult to do. But in early years, we were more successful at that. I'm kind of a senior member on this, having served, I think, about 20 years. We had pretty good success for the first 12 years or so, but I think the last time adjustments were made was back in 1994, so we're facing the reality of politics. But trying to put it aside, it was the thinking of Senator Ortman and joined in by others that legislators are put in an extremely difficult position when they seek to establish the dollar number of their own salaries. It's a specter that can rise up and haunt them running for re-election. And what intrigued me and others about this proposal, because we passed it, I don't know whether it was unanimous, but it was passed, was that by factoring it as a percentage of the governor's salary, henceforth then would alleviate that specter, and the emphasis would be subsequently on whatever the governor's salary is worth. And I think testimony clearly established the fact that the job of being a legislator, the talent and the time required was sufficient to at least justify a 33% of the governor's salary. And I appreciate the presumed reality of 2 and 3% increases, but when you look back 10 years and seen nothing, and you realize what's going on the side with reference to per diem, it seems to me that we've passed the point where incremental salary recommendations are the purpose of this council, and we should do something more significant and substantial to recognize the gap. And I think a 33% or whatever ultimately the legislative body deems is the correct percentage. Our thinking was 33% seems a good start. Maybe it's 40. I don't know, but I think the concept made sense to us last time, and it still resonates well with me.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Representative Earhart, you had a thought about this.
Well, actually, Mr. Chairman and folks, what is included here was a bill that I dropped in, the 5 and 5, just so that if we ever got around to doing anything in the legislature, we'd have something to start talking about. I don't know if I particularly am in love with that. I did have it.
Do you want to pursue it, or do you want to leave it withdraw it?
I certainly prefer it over the 3 and 3. But the second part there, the per diem payments to legislators should be phased out and replaced with a voucher to expense the reimbursement system. I suggested, and it didn't quite carry through here, that there ought to be a flat salary, call it 45, 50, whatever you want. And then with the per diem scrapped, except for voucher to expenses and reimbursement system, that's the way we should travel here. How do you want to arrive at the base salary? If you wanted, I don't know, Mr. Chairman, where does the 33% get us? Has anybody figured that out?
I think it's a spreadsheet that got handed out there, and if you look at it on the right hand side, the bottom right hand quadrant, if I have it right,
okay.
There's a line that says Swain. And if you go across the 2009 column, that increase would put legislators at 39.7. Is that right, Mr. Swain?
I haven't computed it. Is the 39 is 33% of what, please?
The current salary?
Okay, that's right. Okay.
And the 45 is the proposed.
Does that make sense to you?
Where did the extra amount come from over the 39.7, I guess?
That assumes that we take the Swain recommendation, yep, with regard to governor and multiply by 0.33. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And that gets you to 45 in 2011.
Mr. Chairman, Does that mean that the governor's salary has to be raised to that, or are we just benchmarking that?
That's the Swain proposal.
Well, I read something else here that the governor doesn't think he needs a raise, so we're back in the same...
Yes.
He must have his wife still working. I don't know.
Pardon me?
I just made a passing remark that the governor must still have his wife working. Now she's out of the judiciary.
You'll have to ask him. Or her.
I actually know it for a fact. I'm just being fun. So, the question is $45,000 enough? It might be in the ballpark if we're going to get rid of the per diems and go to vouchered expenses, except that that's not going to be a reality figure if, in fact, the governor's not going to accept any raise, unless we want to say, well, you should have taken it, so we're going to raise the legislative salaries as 33% of what you should have had. I mean, let's be realistic, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Mr. Swain.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know what the right number is. I think the importance of, at least in my judgment, the percentage concept is that it gets us away from the political foibles of trying to come up with specific numbers. And 33 was a good beginning last time. It seems reasonable now. If it ever becomes law, it's subject to extensive legislative debate, and they may ultimately come up with some other number that seems appropriate. If we establish this once, then I think we hopefully remove the difficulty of adjusting legislative salaries to an appropriate and realistic amount in the future. If nothing is done, reference to the governor's salary and the concept of 33% is accepted, or the concept of some percentage of the governor's salary is accepted, 33 would provide some kind of increase that at least suggests we value their services at a greater level than is the case today. And maybe that at some point would have enough incentive to deal more realistically with the question of per diem payments. If we don't get something done there, then per diem payments realistically is a way to compensate these people who serve so well and so thoroughly more effectively. Some of us find that distasteful.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would say that I would not be willing to give up 39.7 per diem payments. And I think the per diem payments, at least for the House, would run roughly in the long year, which is this year, about $8,000. So you'd be 39.7 plus 8. And that's probably closer if you're going to force the folks into doing the per diem thing as to where we should be here. And I said, when I said 50, I think we're getting somewhere near that ballpark. So I would certainly go along with Mr. Swain's suggestion here. We're not doing anything with per diem, and his 33 is fine with me.
Would you withdraw your proposal, or do you want us to consider it?
Well, I'm not going to withdraw it from the legislature, because we're going to have a vehicle if we ever get going on anything. That's why I put it out there in the first place. But I will withdraw it from your from this group here. That makes it easier.
Okay. Is there additional discussion here? If not, we have two very different concepts before us. My thought is we vote on them each individually. We've been asked to have a roll call vote. Sandy, is there additional discussion?
I have a clarifying question, too.
Mr. Jones.
Chairman. Mr. Swain, is your 33% proposal contingent and mandatory that the governor's salary be increased in accordance to your second proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jones, I don't think it's within my capability to mandate anything on the part of the governor. I have a subsequent recommendation, I guess, that's been outlined there with reference to that salary. But I guess irrespective of what ultimately comes off there, I just believe that the concept of legislative salaries being a percentage of the governor's at whatever number ultimately will work better in behalf of the citizenry of this state and will ensure that we continue to attract the level of capable legislators that we now have and recognize that the sacrifice they're making is something I guess we expect to a certain extent of people in political service. We've got to be realistic. There hasn't been an adjustment. Anything happened in 9 years, and it costs more to live.
Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Atkins.
To Mr. Swain, and with the greatest amount of regard, and you know I hold that for you, if we recommend a 25% increase in legislative pay, there won't be an increase for another 9 years. My suggestion, as blunt as it may be, is that if this group is going to persist in making those sorts of recommendations, as much as I might agree with the fact that for the sort of talent and sacrifice that would be a fair amount, my suggestion, frankly, would be that we take this whole concept back to the legislature because the recommendations are going to it'll come to us and it'll just as quickly be set aside. To go from $31,000 and some odd that I think we make now to roughly $40,000, give or take about a 25% increase. And while maybe the charge isn't supposed to be, you know, don't take politics into account or something like that, frankly, folks, it's a waste of time to make a recommendation that's just as quickly going to be set aside. The goal here is do something that can be done, at least my goal. And if that's not the goal of the group, then so be it. But if we recommend that, it won't have any regard. If we recommend something in the ballpark of what is palatable, then you give lawmakers some justification for saying the Compensation Council recommended 3 and 3 or 5 and 5 or whatever it is. But something greater than that I just don't think is going to go anywhere.
Mr. Swain?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins. I understand you, but as I understood it, the purpose of forming this Compensation Council in the first place was to find some way, put our blinders on with politics. I know that's impossible. But this is what we're told by the statute, to look at what it's worth, and to make some suggestions that presumably the legislature would find a little more comfortable in accepting so that we avoid the very thing that's happening right now. You're going so long that finally you reach a crisis and you have to do something fairly drastic to catch up. Maybe we haven't reached that point yet, but it seems to me we're reasonably close. And again, on the concept, at least if 33% isn't the figure that'll sail, 32, 31, 30, try that at least rather than 3%, which 3%, given a 9-year gap, doesn't do much to catch up to what presumably was reality 9 years ago.
You won't get an argument from it that it doesn't catch up for 9 years, but I think you just have to deal with the fact that we're not going to make up 9 years. And if we continue to make recommendations that are so substantially beyond what anybody else is getting, it'll go another 9 years and continue to be set aside year in and year out.
Mr.
Stabler.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I expounded quite a bit last meeting on this particular issue and my concern for the premise of citizen legislature and that type of thing. I am concerned about the overall processing that we're doing, and as was suggested, I believe, last time towards the end of our meeting, we had a suggestion somewhat to change some of the methodology to depoliticalize the process that we're going through. Yes, I think the concept of our committee was to try and remove the legislators themselves from the hot seat. Yet I believe fundamentally that fair compensation is always defendable, whether you're in political office, an elected official, or whether you are in private business and that type of thing. But the methodology that we had discussed last time did address some of the issues of the political football that we're wrestling with in this scenario. Okay. And a little bite is something, if that's the council's wishes, as opposed to moving to the 46% increase or whatever percentage. I would ask if Greg knows what the current $31,000, what percent is that from the governor's current $120,000 salary?
It's but about 25, isn't it? Pretty close.
Okay, in our proposal 2 years ago, we had suggested, or part of our recommendation was to increase the governor's salary 14% and increase the legislator's salary by 46% in terms of the raw numbers in the base with that. I think the legislature was trying to make a message here in terms of they are the elected officials and responsible for the position because, in my bewilderment, the fact that our position was so aggressive, they would not fund that agenda, therefore there was no change.
No.
So if we have a bit more pragmatic approach to this thing, and we want to be responsible in that regard, two issues. One is to change the methodology of how we're establishing this and build it on a reasonable stepping stone as opposed to let's make up the difference kind of a thing.
Representative Earhart.
Having been in the legislature for 16 years, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stabler, there was one person that was holding up any kind of an increase for at least about the last 8 years. Is that the last time we got the increase? On per diem, when the... I've got the stuff in my office. I'm sorry I didn't bring it. But do you have a history of the legislative increases along with the per diem increases? The Senate went $10 higher than the House for 4 years. This individual would not let us come anywhere, put on $5, much less $10. And when you came out with that compensation council's recommendation last year, he just ignored it. As he would, now he is not in power anymore. And there's some other things that I think we're going to be addressing since he is not in power anymore. Only his mouth is in power and not his ability to influence. And I think that the current leadership in the House is going to be more amenable to doing something. That'd be my opinion, and Joe, you could tell me differently, but and it may not come all at once, but it's going to come, I think, if things, you know, when a new, especially the Democrats come into power, they have to be careful that they don't get into the spending mode, and so spending might also be in salary increases. So it might be... it might be another 2 years before they can go on it. We'll see what happens with the 4% on all you folks making over $400,000. The next bracket, the next higher bracket. You don't know what I'm talking about, right?
I do.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is I think there's going to be a change of attitude toward doing the right thing for legislators in the House. The Senate has never been burdened with that.
Mr. Chair, just one brief point.
Yeah, Representative Atkins.
I've talked too much already, but I did. If we had done 3 and 3 the last 9 years, we'd actually be at $40,005, which is ahead of what Mr. Swain, Swain's proposal. And that's I rest my case with that point made. I suspect Representative Abrams. Sorry, Earhart, that you are. You're probably right. There's my sense is there's an appetite for some increase, but I think if we got into the pattern of following a modest lunchbox kind of approach of three and three or something like that, that over the course of the long term we'd make just as much progress as trying to make it up in one fell swoop, and it'd be a lot more realistic to do it that way.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Earhart,
did I ask about if you had a history of the, because there was a couple of years in there when they bumped it. Uh-huh. I should have brought it.
Mr. Chair, this has the per diem history just for the last 10 years, and then not going as far back
but
as you.
But the salary as well?
This doesn't have salary. That hasn't changed in 10 years.
Well, when they did change it, Mr. Chairman, they moved it rapidly over a few years, if I remember, playing catch-up the same as we're trying to do now. You may be done when I go down to my office and find it, but I'm going to go find it.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Earhart? Just so I'm clear, have you withdrawn your proposal with regard to legislative pay?
Mr. Chair.
As I said, I'll go with Mr. Swain, Mr. Chairman, but that isn't fit. I was talking about going to a flat and getting rid of the per diem and going to vouchers.
Great.
As long as we're not fiddling, I'll go with Mr. Swain as long as we are not going to fiddle with the per diem. Otherwise, we're not doing the per diem anyway. We're not going to suggest anything with that.
That's true.
I presume. Am I correct?
It depends on the will of the committee.
Okay. Well, will you or won't you?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Jones.
Back to Mr. Swain's question. With your 33% benchmark, and this is a question to the council chair, does the governor have to take an increase if we were to pass that? And if he does not take an increase, then that means that the 33% that's benchmark is null and void. And I guess you got to help me understand how one can go without the other being done.
I'm not an attorney, but let me take a crack at it. And we're surrounded by attorneys, so I'm sure I'll be correct.
I'm sure
I go on campus.
As it should be.
Mr. Chair, I guess I want Mr. Swain to let me know, is it his intent for them to go in concert with one another, regardless of the legal question, because if it's ultimately left up to the governor to make the decision, then it doesn't work.
Mr. Swain.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jones, my understanding of this is that if this concept of a percentage of the governor's salary was adopted by the legislature, it wouldn't make any difference whether there was any change in the governor's salary or not. It would still be effective. What is it, Greg, 2 years from now?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Swain, that's correct.
2 years from now, if this concept was adopted, the legislative salary would be some percent, whatever the legislature would ultimately conclude if they bought this concept of the then-governor's salary, whatever it is, adjusted or unadjusted. And mindful again, this is 2 years hence. We're going to be 2 years further behind when something of this kind happens, if it does. Instead of 9 years, it'll be 11 years.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Jones?
If the governor's salary remained the same and this concept was adopted and it was 33%, then a legislative salary 2 years from now, if the legislature appropriated the money, would be 33% of 120, which is what I think is exhibited here, 39,000.
Okay. That answers my question.
Great.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion? If not, we have two proposals before us. We'll take them in order. A roll call vote has been requested.
Sorry, Mr. Shea.
Yeah, Senator Latz.
I apologize for having come in late. The session, the Senate was still in session when I left, but I didn't want to miss all of this meeting today. Senator Moi, by the way, is chairing her committee as soon as session is done, so that she couldn't be here. If I might ask if there was any discussion regarding Mr. Swain's proposal and whether the 33% was an appropriate percentage as opposed to some different percentage of the governor's salary. And the reason I ask is I'm not clear as to exactly what the basis was for 33%, but I think it might be fair to consider the proportion of time and energy that legislators spend on their duties relative to the proportion of time that the governor spends on his duties, or at least to reflect that the legislators are in session on average for a third of the time the governor is, maybe a little bit more than that, but we also have year-round duties as well, and whether that was discussed or considered.
We discussed a variety of things, Mr. Swain.
Chairman, Senator Latz, the concept of the legislative salaries being a percentage of the governor was first surfaced 2 years ago in this council by Senator Ortman. And I can't remember what number originally surfaced. We tried some different numbers, and somehow 33% was the number that emerged from this council. And whether that's the correct percentage or not, I'm not sure. But my proposal is principally predicated on the validity of the concept of the legislative salary being a percentage of the governor. Whatever it is, if this sails and the legislature ultimately discusses it and comes up with some number, which hopefully would reflect reality. I'm not a compensation expert. I don't know what the right number is, but somehow what we're doing now undervalues the service. Incremental changes haven't worked. This, we felt 2 years ago, had a better opportunity to succeed and to reduce the impact of straight politics. And we were convinced then, and I'm convinced now more than ever, that the concept better serves us and legislative adequate compensation in the future if we implement it.
Okay. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I support the concept of tying legislative compensation to the governor's salary as a percentage. My own personal view is that 33% does not fairly reflect the appropriate percentage of that. And I'm trying to divorce the analysis from the actual dollar amount that's involved, because I think if we go with this analysis, then we ought to be, it ought to be on principle, and the dollars will fall wherever they fall, and you know the public will, the media will report it as a big X percent increase, but I think once the adjustment is made, it will be in the long term a more fair adjustment, and so. I did ask, you know, I think even if you took on average, let's assume that the average legislator spends at least the amount of time every year as equivalent to a five-month legislative session. Making decisions on the same $34 billion budget that the governor does. I think it's... I think it would be fair to peg it at 5/12 of the governor's salary. I don't know if there would be any support.
About 40%.
That's what the...
rough math.
Rough math, 5/12.
31.
Not bad for rounding, eh?
I would defer to Mr. Christensen.
31.3, I think.
Just a second.
And that would account for... You know, during the non-budget year, we have a somewhat shorter session, but we're all working year-round, evening meetings, weekend meetings, early morning meetings, phone calls all the time, as well as during the day, preparing for the upcoming legislative sessions. So I think I would be inclined, I'm not sure procedurally what would be the appropriate way to do it, I'm not sure how you were planning to do the up or down vote, but...
We have two proposals before us. If you'd like to make a third, you're welcome to do so.
Well, my proposal would be to peg it at 40%.
Is that a third proposal?
I'm not sure if I want to divide all the votes between three proposals. I think what I'd be inclined to do is if Mr. Swain, if the proposal to peg it with the governor's salary, I'd move to amend that particular proposal to 40% instead of 33% and see if there's a support for that. If there's not, then there isn't. Otherwise, we could see if Mr. Swain's proposal passes, then we could deal with the appropriate percentage at that time.
Chairman.
Senator Corn.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question on Senator Latt's proposal and a question to Senator Latt's, if he would yield for a question. Mr. Chairman, Senator Latt, so then let's say this hypothetically did pass, then would you propose that the Senate lower its per diem then from $96 a day during the legislative session? Would you propose that we would lower that down then?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corn, I think I'd have to think about that. I think per diem is kind of an independent question designed to reimburse for expenses, not designed to compensate us for our time, if you will.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I'm not averse to it necessarily.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I would disagree with that. I think the if you look at it, the per diem actually is part of our compensation as a legislator. And if I'm not mistaken, I talked to one of the members here about, I believe our per diem is considered, it's taxable, and then the whole amount goes towards our retirement, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Chairman, do we know somebody that knows the answer to that question?
Mr. Hilbringer?
I can say about two sentences before I get into trouble. Per diem for members who live more than 50 miles from the capital is not taxed. If it's less than that, it is taxed.
And then, Mr. Chairman, would that then, what about the, let's say we receive $10,000 a year of per diem, does that go with our $31,400, does that go our retirement based on that whole amount?
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, the per diem for session is counted as income for pension calculation.
Mr. Chairman, it's also...
Representative Earhart.
You also should know that if you live within 50 miles of the Capitol, your per diem is taxed. If you live away from that, it is not taxed, and that's a federal matter.
Okay.
I think I mentioned last time when we were at $56, I think my net was about $36 on the per diem. Whereas maybe I was in Washington at a conference, and I was sitting next to a senator who was drawing $66 and not being taxed on it. So that doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's something we have to deal with the president.
Mr. Chairman, I have another question.
Mr. Corn.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't know if anybody has done any data on this, but in looking at this sheet that we were just passed out, legislative annual salaries, I'm wondering if anybody has done any calculation per person that we represent. I believe now a senator in Minnesota represents, I think, is it around 80,000 people? So if we figure that out, what about in California where they're receiving $110,000 annual salary? How many people are they representing? And I guess I'm just wondering if anybody has any information or data on how much, where it breaks down as far as that's concerned.
Well, I would tell you, Mr. Chairman and Senator, that several of those top ones, maybe the top three, four, are considered professional legislators, whatever that means. It means that they're there more on a full-time basis.
Okay.
We're not, of course.
Sometimes it feels like it.
No. I'm kidding.
I think I got to get the Puerto Rico gig.
I think that would be nice.
All right, we have three proposals before us. Ms. Marley.
Mr. Chair, just this is process. For clarity's sake, could we take these one at a time? And I think we've spent
That's
most
my
of
my intent.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of my proposal, I think I will wait and see what happens with the vote on the two proposals and then address the question of the amount of percentage afterward if that's a proposal that prevails.
Is there additional discussion?
Just a question, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Stanton.
Your intent is to take these in order.
Correct.
They're listed here. So hypothetically, an individual could support the Swain approach, but if that were not to pass, we'd want to see something come out of the council. If that's the case, should such a hypothetical situation be resolved by an individual voting for both?
Leave that to your good judgment.
Thank you for your guidance, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
With that.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Swain.
Are we voting for one or the other, or, again, apropos of Mr. Stanek's question, can you vote for both? I'm sure, what's the intent, as you see it, please?
Mr. Chair, the easy way to do this would be to ask people to vote for one or the other, and then if there is no surviving proposal, then we'll take it up again.
Okay. Advice to the chair, advice taken. Vote for one or the other, and we'll see where we come down. We will have a roll call vote. Sandy, you call the roll, please.
Atkins?
Mine.
Christensen?
Swain.
Derda?
Atkins.
Earhart?
Swain.
Jones?
Atkins.
Coring?
Swain.
Latz?
Swain.
Meyerly?
Atkins.
Shaver?
Neither.
Stapler?
Atkins.
Stanek?
Swain.
Swain.
I'm the key vote. I think I vote for my own.
I had a shot there.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to read the names of the absent members or no?
Sure.
Leydig, absent. Leek, absent. Moi, absent. And Rukavina, absent.
Thank you. Natalie?
Mr. Chair, the tally is 5 votes for Atkins, 6 votes for Swain.
Story of my life. Story of my life.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I was persuaded by Mr. Atkins' sort of practical advice to us when he introduced his proposal that sometimes a bridge too far is not a bridge at all. And if we... It is the ruling of the chair that the Swain proposal is the recommendation that will go forward. I'm not sure how we're measuring this in terms of votes and majorities, et cetera. I really would argue that we have an alternative proposal because I do think it's important that we show some movement rather than simply sending something up that's not going to be well received when it gets it.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr.
The reason I got this list of the salaries over the years was because you notice they did take some giant leaps. If you go back to, and I don't know what was going on with politically at that time, 72 to 73, they doubled. 78 to 79, they doubled. And then not more than 4 or 5 years, they increased each time until we get to this latest stalemate of 99 through today. With no movement. So the point is that we're playing catch up back then, one time or another. And I don't know, you served in 68 or 69, and you were Mr. Chairman? No, I don't know. If anybody here was...
At Oakwood's.
So the point is that there have made...
Since you've opened this up, I have to share an aside with you. When the governor comes to my old legislative district, I say, welcome to the best legislative district in the world. And he goes, shaves, ancient history, move on.
Well, at least he's still talking to you. That's
there you go.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I'd like to speak to the point brought up by Ms. Meyerly. I think that the worst outcome that could occur would be a recommendation that's summarily ignored by the legislature, resulting in no increase. I think Representative Adkins was persuasive and articulate on that point. I also think it's fair to say that we have a one-vote margin in favor of the Swain proposal with members present, so clearly we're not operating by consensus or unanimous consent here. I would join in Ms. Meyerly. I'd like to see some way that we could reflect that in this report, such to say that, I mean, I feel as though with my vote I was able to make a statement in terms of what I view as my statutory charge, but I respect their alternative viewpoints, and I think it's important that the council make some type of statement in the event that the Swain recommendation or the tie to 33% of the governor's salary is not viewed with favor by the legislature. At a minimum, this council urges the legislature to come up with some type of increase over a two-year period so that we can get out of this awful predicament of years going by with nothing happening.
Chairman?
Mr. Swain.
I concur.
Again, we've tried to operate on consensus with broad input. We've invited a variety of people publicly and all members by email to chime in. It's not, we're an advisory group, and I'd look for guidance for those that voted for the Swain proposal. The author concurs. For those that did vote for the Swain proposal, is there anyone who objects in a summary paragraph hammered out by Hubinger for your review that on this section, it reflects that notion that some progress on compensation should take place. Any objections?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear that repeated again. We go for one, but if that doesn't work, we suggest the other?
No. The point is that all those who voted for a pay increase, there is broad consensus in our group for a pay increase.
Okay.
There are differing levels of pay increase. The split is not intended in any way to be taken as advice to do nothing. And an overwhelming majority of the council believes legislative pay should be increased. And that to have these long periods of time with no pay increase does not work in the best interest of the state or the legislature. Is that fair? I'm doing it off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. I'll be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, I think your last sentence is extremely important, because if we were doing this in sort of parliamentary order, it would have been my intent to amend the Atkins recommendation to impose or suggest an annual cost of living increase calculated in the same way that we recommended the judge's cost of living increase be calculated. Again, to put this in some kind of a mode where it's considered acceptable that things adjust and not have it be tied to personalities, parties, et cetera.
Is that a consensus thought? Yeah, Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Chair, one reservation in that, and that is that to the extent that the legislature controls those negotiated settlements with our various labor organizations, we would then indirectly be controlling our own. And I thought about that, and I actually gave some thought to making the motion to put it in that fashion. but I think we might be playing a little bit with fire. Maybe tie up the CPI.
Okay, CPI the Metro CPI would be acceptable, you know, being a little more consensus than parliamentary here.
Yeah, we have, again, we're an advisory group, and it's meant to be useful, not prescriptive. Are people comfortable with that notion?
Yes.
And again, you'll get another crack at it via email. Remember, no objection is consent. And you get 24 hours. Yes.
And I will tell you, Mr. Chairman, that I think that tying something to anything in the atmosphere over here to an escalator also may be looked down on. I mean, this is not a realistic world over here, you know. This is fairyland in a lot of cases.
Really?
Yes.
As a participant from that world, that's interesting that you would make that comment.
Mr. Chairman.
So I think we're getting pretty far afield, if I can insert myself here. The group has spoken. We have consensus. If there's additional input on this subject, I'm all ears. Otherwise, I think we should move on, consistent with Representative Earhart's desire to be part of the bonding bill. Yes,
a point of clarification,
Mr. Stadler.
Mr. Chairman, our proposal might be considered, per se, as the Swain proposal is the first option, and then the Atkins proposal would be option B. With a CPI index to it, is that what we're proposing here to do?
I believe that's the consensus of the group. Mr. Swain.
Let me take another crack at this, Mr. Chairman.
Have at it.
The percentage concept is the recommended proposal, and for whatever reason, if that isn't doable, then something needs to be done in 5%, 5% CPI. Isn't this what we're saying?
3%.
3%. Oh, 3%. Geez, I tried a little harder now. Okay, 3. 3-3 CPI.
Is there broad consensus here?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cora.
I don't know if there's broad consensus. I gotta say that I agree with Representative Earhart that I think tying it to anything, I just don't know that it would sell around here. And so I just want to, you know, I'm fine with whatever decision you make, but the thing that I think would be the best is just tying it to what the governor's salary is on whatever percentage we want to, that this committee wants to come up with. But I think if we try to tie it into something, I don't think that the legislature would think that was that would be a good idea. Politically, you know, this is obviously, we know this is a very political place, so that's just my opinion. So
I get the sense that there is broad consensus for an increase.
Oh absolutely.
There is a difference of opinion.
Exactly.
The majority is in favor of the Swain proposal that would cause. Does someone have a phone near the microphone? For the Swain proposal. Absent the Swain proposal, it's for the Atkins proposal plus CPI. Have I characterized the consensus of
with one
Representative Atkins?
I apologize, Mr.
Have at it.
But I think I'm with you up to the point where the word CPI is used.
They deleted. Incorrect. Great.
What I would 3%. Suggest is 3%, 3%, and that there be the objective is to have ongoing annual adjustments so that the legislature continue to take this issue up. As opposed to tying it to any particular measure, but
yeah.
that's what the senator and the representative have.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just say that I think we all know that legislators are elected to make tough decisions every day, and you know we can't hide behind some automatic pay increase if we're going to raise our pay. we have to step up to the plate and we have to vote on it. That's my opinion. We took some tough votes in the Senate today, and I'll have to explain those back home. I think it's the same thing with the pay. If I vote to increase my pay, I have to go home and explain why. I had to explain why when I voted to raise the per diem limit, and I explained it, and so that's just the way I think that it should be, rather than tied to something that's just automatic, that lets, in essence, is what we're trying to do is let people off the hook, and I just don't think that that's the right thing to do.
Is there other discussion here,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lett.
I think that position is a recipe for inaction, as we've seen for however many years it's been since we last saw an increase. It's a politically tough vote to take, so politically tough that no one ever takes it. And it's not really me or any of the current sitting members of the legislature who will be most affected by, you know, whether or not we tie it to some benchmark like the CPI. It's all people that might consider running someday for a position that has such a low salary that it's a major financial sacrifice to even want to serve, and those who win. How long are you even willing to continue to make that financial sacrifice? And that ill serves democracy. So I don't know that I don't know if it's even legal for us to provide for automatic increases, but our constitutional provide for automatic increases, but I think at least we should give some sense of this council, if it is the sense of this council, that there ought to be some annual increases, that they ought to be linked to something objectively nonpartisan and respected from an economic standpoint. If it makes it a little bit easier for the legislature to take care of its own house, spoken generically, then I think there's nothing wrong with that. Otherwise, the political hurdle is just so high as to be insurmountable until we end up where we are today.
Any others? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that you stated this proposition differently the last time you stated it, because my understanding was go with the Swain and then suggest, without being specific, that there ought to be an increase. Not that we are going to now say the second idea is a 3%. I think you ought to leave it like you had it, Swain proposal, with the strong recommendation that the legislature pick their heels up and do something about this, and let them come to the conclusion whether it should be 2, 3, 5, or whatever. You're making a recommendation of where we think it should be, the 33% or whatever you want to percentage you figure, and then you say, but whatever you do, do something. That's what I thought you said the first time.
My intent was to embody the Atkins proposal at a minimum. And if there's a differing consensus, let's hear about it. Do I reflect the group?
No.
Terrific. Any more discussion about legislators? If not, we'll go to constitutional officers. There are two proposals before you. One is under my name and simply a reflection of the Department of Employee Relations comments last time. The other is a proposal by our member, Mr. Swain. I'd ask for a vote on these and in the order that they appear. Is there a discussion? I think we've gone over these issues, but I don't mean to shortcut it in any way. Mr. Swain.
Mr. Chairman, can I take a crack at my own proposal?
Sure can.
Well, I had the privilege of chairing this Compensation Council 2 years ago.
And I was glad you did.
Well, in terms of measuring results, I was a great failure, but whatever. You know, mindful again, is it Mr. Botern? Botern?
Botern.
I'm sorry, again. But he reminded us, the council is instructed by statute to consider the amount of compensation paid in government service in the private sector to persons with similar qualifications et cetera. We came into being 20 years ago, and I think I was on the first one. An attempt by the legislature establishing this statute, so let's find some group that can weigh this very delicate subject sans the political influence. And it's obvious from just the discussions we've been having for the last hour or so that it's impossible to do so. That's nevertheless what we were instructed to do by statute, to hopefully overcome the disposition that compensation would be dealt with in extreme measures every 8 or 10 years. The governor's salary was last adjusted in 1998. It's now been 9 years. Whatever we do won't become effective until 2 years from now. Our council 2 years ago took a look at the salary then of the governor and recommended an adjustment that was commensurate with the inflation factor of the years that it had intervened, and that came up to a number of $137,000. If that had merit, and I believe it does, or did, then the proposal that I've submitted suggests that it take that number and adjust it for inflation in the next 2 years, and then in a concession to, quote, political reality, after I've just repudiated it as a concept, not make it applicable until January 1 of the beginning of the term, next gubernatorial term. And I think to ignore it again, notwithstanding the fact that the governor's commissioner of employee relations said it's enough right now, is not consistent with what our assignment is by statute. Whatever his views are, ultimately will have some political relevance, but that's not pertinent to what we've been told to do in looking at the marketplace. And this, again, is a job that oversees $34 billion, and I hope that's enough.
Terrific. Chair. Yeah, Senator Warren.
Mr. Chair and to Mr. Swain, what if we, in your proposal, let's say we had the effective date be what you were just talking about, begin when the new governor takes office, and would it be 2011?
That's what my proposal is.
Is that what your proposal is?
Yes, sir.
And then the legislature, the legislator's pay would be begin at that point, too? Is that your proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Herring, that's not necessarily my proposal.
Uh-huh.
The proposal for legislative salaries, I think, needs to be dealt with today.
Okay.
However, they ultimately, the legislative proposal would be effective 2009.
That's the proposal.
Proposal. And if the legislature chose, for whatever reason, to make some adjustment then, and then anything further 2011, that's their disposition. They'd have at least that environment to consider and work in.
Mr. Chairman, question. Is
sure.
The constitutional officers under the same constraints as the legislators are about receiving salary increases in the same legislature in the same term?
No. Yes. Pardon me. Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. We've got an expert who will lead us out of the wilderness.
Mr. Chairman and members, the governor is not subject to the same limitation, I believe, on increasing the salary in the Constitution. That's simply the members of the legislature. The charge for the Compensation Council does limit your recommendations to take effect 2 years from the current, well, in the next biennium. And I hope that clears it up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what about the Senate, which has a 4-year term?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart, it's tied to the next term of the House of Representatives. So
okay.
Your cycle.
Thank you.
Is there additional discussion? We have two proposals before us. Yes, Mr. Stable.
Certainly. We've got to have both sides or something. Issue that I understand from our assigned responsibility is that we are to take these things into consideration. We did have, I believe, 2 years ago, an extensive report stating that the competitive salaries, the positioning at that time, was, in the opinion of the governor and his people, not necessary to service our various needs in the constitutional officers about the state. We've heard only a limited report this year, and that the governor is not recommending a salary increase. Respectively, we didn't have the detail that we had 2 years ago to that degree. Therefore, I would think that we are serving the responsibility that we are assigned if we go with Chairman Schaefer's issue.
Terrific. Is there additional discussion? Now we have two proposals. We'll vote on them in order if you call the roll, please. This is on the Schaefer proposal, which is for no increase.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Did you say we were going to vote on... I thought we were going to do it like we did before, either vote for Schaefer or Swain.
Oh, okay, great. Terrific.
Are we allowed to vote for neither?
You certainly are.
I guess before we take the roll, I would have one additional suggestion. That is, in between these two, perhaps lie a happy medium.
Set a third proposal.
I'd suggest 3 and 3 for all constitutional officers. By the way, the Schaefer proposal only apparently applies to the governor.
It's meant to be for all.
Okay. I'd suggest 3 and 3 for all the constitutional officers. Frankly, I'd apply that to the agency heads as well.
Well, remember, that's linked to the governor's salary, if I've got it correct. Correct? So you, again, back to my line.
So
the knee bone is connected to the shin bone?
You got it. It seems to me that something in the neighborhood of 3 and 3 or whatever that magic figure would be is probably the most workable of any of the above.
Well, in essence, we now have three proposals before us in an attempt to find consensus. Can you read that off? Again, we're an advisory group. This is not a formal committee. Can you track him?
Tracking the Atkins proposal, Mr. Chair?
What we're going to do is vote on Schaefer, Swain, or Atkins.
Correct.
Great.
Atkins.
Atkins.
Christensen.
Schaefer.
Derda.
Atkins.
Earhart.
Swain.
Jones.
Schaefer.
Coring.
Swain.
Latz.
Swain.
Meyerly.
Schaefer.
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 Stabler.
Schaefer.
Stanek.
Swain.
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 Mr. Chair, the absent members are Ladig, Leek, Moi, and Rukavina.
I have 5 and 2.
Mr. Chair, the count is 2 for Atkins, 5 for Schaefer, 5 for Swain.
Sounds like the country.
And Coring has to leave for another meeting. Sorry about that.
Let me take
Chairman?
Yeah.
One possibility is just to suggest we couldn't reach consensus. We couldn't reach a decision.
Yeah.
I hate to...
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think what we do, if people don't object, as we say, there was no consensus with regard to the governor's salary,
and constitutional officers, and that there was a split amongst us for some sort of an increase, ranging from CPI to a more robust package, and there was another group almost equal in size that wanted no increase for the governor and constitutional officers.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
No. Would you repeat that, please? Because if you're going to do it that way, I don't agree.
Or we'll take a crack at it. Again, this is an advisory group, and it's meant to be easy. And so take a crack at it.
I would like to propose the process of elimination. We've had three. We eliminate the number three, and then we revote on the two.
To that point, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Atkins.
The one that got two votes. My sense is that we've got a real gulf here from folks that want nothing to folks that want a lot. The art of compromise, folks, is to find where is it in some place between the two, not to eliminate that one proposal that's between the two. So with due respect, Mr. Stabler, let's figure out is there something that that if you can't, and my suggestion, let's work each other over a little bit. I know that the governor said he doesn't want an increase, but remember, folks, we tie a lot of people in, as Mr. Shaver said, our agency heads, our county administrators, our city administrators, superintendents, I guess, are out. But we got all these people that are tied into, and we've got this compression that's taking place among public works directors. They're now almost making more than the city administrators and county administrators for whom they work. Give them a break, folks. How about three and three?
And if you look further, there is a proposal to address that.
I see that, but we're not acted on that. Well, if you want to depart and go to that, I'm okay with that. But I'd at least suggest that we'd throw a bone to these folks that is a modest cost of living increase over what they made in the last couple of years.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Stanek.
I guess I view this as a somewhat different situation than the attempt to characterize consensus or what the approach was about legislative pay. In that case, we had an agreement that legislative pay should be increased. I think that your characterization, to me at least, suggests that we were evenly divided. I can only speak for myself. I voted for the Swain proposal, but my backup position would clearly be the Atkins proposal. I think, again, from my perspective, the least acceptable outcome with regard to the governor's salary, which triggers all the other constitutional officers, is no increase for another period of goodness knows how long. So I think this is slightly different than the consensus characterization regarding legislative.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Marley.
As Mr. Stabler reminded us, we had a fair amount of data 2 years ago, and I very much hope we accept the recommendation number six that came from Mr. Derda, so that 2 years from now, whoever is sitting making these recommendations actually has some real information to work from. And as to the governor's salary, the next council can very well make a recommendation that could still become effective with the term of the new governor. I recognize that doesn't address some of the concern about agency heads, but again, your recommendation, I think, would address that in large part. I, quite frankly, am persuaded that when you're looking at the top constitutional officers, these are people who run not to have remuneration, but for a variety of other reasons, and salary is the least consideration. Even if you look at the chief executive of our country, the president's salary bears no relationship to the responsibilities or the stature of that office. It's simply a number. And we're never going to be able to pick a number that that fairly compensates these individuals. We simply have to settle on something that, that we're going to be comfortable with at the end of the day, and I personally don't think we have enough information before us at this time to make any recommendation for change.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Swain.
Well, I intend to vote for the DIRTA proposal. That's, but I'd remind those of us who served 2 years ago that this discussion, that we don't have enough information this time around to make an informed decision, but we did 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, we recommended that the salaries of the governor be adjusted from $120,000 to $137,000. So we had enough information to warrant making that recommendation 2 years ago, but we don't have enough information now to make any further adjustment, which negates what we did 2 years ago. I find that perplexing.
Mr. Chairman, someone asked for the total compensation package that the governor now gets at our last meeting. I haven't heard anything about that. You know, when you talk about the chief executive of the United States, there are so many other perks that go into there that the, whatever he gets paid, $250,000 or whatever, it makes no never mind, because he has his whole life laid out for him and taken care of and long after he leaves the office. That is another question, whether or not, but maybe we should be cutting the governor's salary if we find that he has enormous amounts of other things, perks, houses, drivers, cars. I mean, is that a possibility, Mr. Chairman?
You can do whatever you want.
Well, we can't do it without some information. That's, and I think that was somebody, if not, I know we don't have time now to scrape it up, but this did come up when I carried the legislation to unburden the local units of government from their salary caps. And it was asked, and there were some figures that came forth, as a matter of fact, some estimates of what the governor's total compensation is. But I'm not going to go into that, since this group apparently doesn't care. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
On second thought, I would suggest that our report indicate that there were three proposals and the vote for each.
I think that gets us in the direction of clarity. And as a reflection of where we are, and if people are comfortable with that, let's proceed on that basis. Yes, sure. Senator Lance.
I'm comfortable with that. I'm a bit distressed that while there seems to be a consensus that legislative pay ought to be increased in some amount, that there is not a recognition that inflation occurs with respect to the governor and agency heads. In effect, the vote for the chairman's proposal was, in real terms, a vote to cut the governor's salary, because inflation will march on. And if it's a 3% inflation increase per year, you do the math. What's that? About 6% or somewhere around there, in real terms, cut in the governor's salary. That doesn't seem to me to reflect reality in any sense of the word. It seems to me more of a political statement than anything else. If the governor chooses not to take a salary increase, that's his decision. But I think as a matter of public policy, we can at least reflect. And his commissioners, aren't in a position even to indicate that they want an increase in salary, because if they go against the governor, they're going to get fired.
And if I spoke up about the compensation of the CEO of UBS, I'd be fired too.
There you go.
Welcome to our world.
All right, but our job is to look out for them, even if they can't speak up for themselves.
I'm sure they appreciate your concern.
I hope they do. But, you know, Ms. Meyerly is right. No one runs for public office, to get rich. But there are no guarantees when you leave public office that you're going to be able to turn it into a financial boondoggle anyway. And even the suggestion is once they leave office, their path for long-term security is set, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't think we ought to be making our judgments.
At the lowly legislative level, I know that's not the case.
Well, it certainly is not. But I think we ought to be looking at the question of what is fair compensation for the job that's being done. And to me, that is the only question that ought to come into this. All politics should be set aside if we're going to do this. Now, whether we have a formal market analysis in order to use as a benchmark or not, clearly we don't need a market analysis to tell us that inflation is going on. I'm a bit distressed at the outcome of the vote, but that said, I agree with Mr. Swain. Apparently there was adequate information available. And you don't even really need a whole lot of information. You go back, you figure out what the inflation rate was from the time of the 120 was set. No one needs to tell you inflation occurred, and you just adjust it accordingly.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Marley.
Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, if I could just perhaps clear the record, my implication was not that people run for elective office to get tickets to get some more lucrative position after they end. I quite frankly was thinking of people who choose to do things out of their own motivation, and the best example I can give you is my law school classmates who chose to go into public interest law as opposed to seeking a position with a private firm where clearly they knew their financial compensation was going to be less, but they chose to do it out of commitment to the law or commitment to personal goals and values.
Mr. Chairman, do any of the people we're talking about have to take the salary if they are awarded it? Do the constitutional officers, the governor, the legislature, who knows the answer to that one? They can take a reduced salary, if I remember correctly, but I'm not sure of that.
I believe that's the case. But anyone in the crowd know for sure?
I believe a previous state auditor drew $1 per year.
Yeah.
So okay. That would suggest to me you can take less than the full salary if you choose.
Is there further discussion on the issue of constitutional officers' salaries? If not, the next item up is agency head salaries. And again, we heard from the administration. No one else has chimed in on this. All were invited to do so.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Swain.
Two questions, please. Apropos of the previous item, gubernatorial salaries, was it the decision the report is going to indicate the vote? Mm-hmm. Is that?
That was
okay,
my thought.
Okay. And the question of agency salaries, is the issue before us the question of whether the categorization of the agency heads appropriate? You know, some of them are group one or at 85% or 95% or?
There's a whole roster you got in your first packet.
Right. But this is the issue before us, whether any of these or all of them should change with reference to the percentage of the governor, because otherwise we don't deal with agency head salaries. I'm not being very clear.
Yeah, my recollection was that this group did a pretty extensive effort.
Yes, sir.
Some time ago.
Right. So that's the issue, whether or not that effort in terms of positioning
what I would call a grid put in place and adopted. Is it consensus that we leave the grid alone?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
That's your question. I noticed in our last report we said we make no recommendations regarding changes to the salary ranges for heads of agencies. And your proposal is stated in slightly different terms. There is not an immediate need. Is there some reason that different language was chosen?
Yeah. I'd be happy to revert, again, the goal is consensus, to the language of the previous report, if that's acceptable to people. Mr. Swain.
Mr. Chairman, I can't support your proposal that there's not an immediate need to modify the salary ranges. But I think what we said before, again, Mr. Stanek, was...
Mr. Chair, Mr. Swain, we make no recommendation regarding changes to the salary range. is for heads of state agencies. I suppose we could graft on the language and metropolitan agencies, and that would conform to the previous recommendation, where we were making no recommendation. And in making no recommendation, we said we're making no recommendation.
Are people comfortable with that in a consensus format?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Great.
I just wanted, Mr. Chair, to make a record that I'm a local agency head, and I will be not voting on this matter. Thank you.
You get a gold star for conflict of interest declaration. Thank you. On the record, on the tape.
Thank you.
We're now on to other items. Item 5. I listened carefully to our fellow member, Mr. Durda, in our last meeting, and he made the observation that a system of exceptions eventually collapses on itself. I think that's a paraphrase.
That's close enough.
And so in the interest of trying to bring some rationale here and also consistent with local control, my thought is that we at least discuss this item and try to get out of the linkage box that many units of government have brought off. I don't mean to spend a lot of time on this, and if it finds favor with the group in relatively short order, let's vote on it. If not, we can offer it up for groups in the future to think about.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Christensen.
Let me move the Durda language.
You know we're on 5. Which is the salary limit on employees of local units of government be repealed.
I'll move it.
All right. Mr. Atkins has moved it. Is there a second?
Second.
There's seconded by Swain?
No.
Oh, Stabler? Is there a discussion of this?
Well, my understanding, Mr. Chairman, was that after the brush we had 2 years ago, that it was, in effect, going to fade away. Now, does anybody tell me what the current situation is? They made some adjustments regarding the governor's salary, and after that, they were not going to pay any attention to it. That was the compromise, I think, they finally came out. Something to that effect.
Maybe, again, we invite...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Everhart, under your bill that passed 2 years ago, the cap was raised from 95% of the governor's salary as the cap to 110%. That limit is also adjusted by inflation, and I think
right.
that the Department of Employee Relations has adjusted that so that it's the equivalent of 116% now.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any language in the bill that passed that has that limit expire.
Well, in effect, Mr. Chairman, if you put an inflation factor on there, it does expire.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, it does continue to set a limit that gets adjusted by the rate of inflation. We hear from local units of government that that limit, even though it's increasing, still poses difficulties for them being able to attract and retain their top managers.
I agree we should get rid of it. Because I tried to do that 2 years ago.
I assume you'll support the
proposal. I will.
Can I call a question?
Yeah. Is there questions called? Is there a consensus? Is there a need to call the roll here? Hoo-yah. All right. Terrific.
Again, Mr. Chair, I abstain. Same grounds.
Yeah. Thank you. Gold star.
Thank you.
If not, we're now on to the Durda proposal with regard to setting the stage for the next compensation council. Will you speak to this, please?
Mr. Chairman, the evening's awkwardness is really embodied in this proposal. because it's a group of very bright people trying to chase down a dark dog in a room without lights. And there's an easier way of doing it. What's in this paragraph, and it, I admit I had to struggle quite a bit because you put about four chapters of a book into one paragraph here. But it has three parts. First part is guidance and policy, data, and time. The first part says that the legislature should be the guiding light. They should say, what are the markets for these various groups? When you look at judges, when you look at legislators, is it a five-state area? Where are these markets? What is the comparative base? That becomes the policy. The second thing that I would view the legislature's responsibility would say, where should Minnesota be? The 50th percentile, the average? Because what that does, and it may be extremely naive on my part, but what it does is introduce an element of reasonableness for the voter. They say, well, we're at the average of the five-state area, as opposed to 3% or 33,000, because when you do it that way, it's compared individually. You go to the external market, define that market, and then compare, and then detail what the policy should be. Where do we expect to be? We're at the 50th percentile. We're at the average, whatever. Second component is the data. Now, we talked about last time around, there was a good deal of data, but there's special ways. We had no real data around compression. Had no real data around penetration of the salary groups, that kind of thing. There's various ways of doing it, but it outlines in this paragraph just a few of the basics that would give the next group a perspective on just what is the congruency, the internal equity of this system. Then the third component says that data should be available by the first of the year, because it takes a few readings to see where you are, and more than just a couple of sessions. So again, the proposal is that three pieces, and that's all I wanted to speak to, is that jammed in there are some essentials. And the most obvious essential is the action on the part of the state legislature that says, we'll set the policy, we'll set the direction, we'll guide the next council, and indeed the state.
Didn't
Mr. Earhart.
Didn't we, Mr. Chairman, just have some figures on compression? Can you repeat those?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hubinger.
And Representative Earhart, we requested and received data from the Department of Employee Relations on the salary levels of their top managers in state government and learned that there are approximately 83 managers who are within 3% of the salary of their agency head.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yeah, Mr. Drew.
Example, Representative Earhart. That data says we're going to deal with the top managers. Compression is more important at the entry level. Because here's what I mean by compression at the entry level. Someone who is a professional within the state agency, maybe 4 or 5 years of tenure, finds themselves at the same salary of entry people. That's compression. And that is a problem. Much more of a problem there than comparing their salary with the private sector, because the people who chose the public sector understand it's a different environment. They understand that the pay level is not comparable with the private sector. But compression at that low end, that's where you lose. That's also what, for referencing the other part, when you start talking about turnover data, where is it? 3 years worth of turnover data. Is there any spikes within the agency? It gives this group an opportunity to see where that compression may be impacting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was referring when I raised this last meeting that about a specific agency, and they are losing skilled people at the top level, and that was a transportation MnDOT, and you can't replace those people. If they ever get any money to improve the road and transit situation here, they're not going to have enough people to guide the money through the necessary process, because they're going to be gone. They're gone out to other units of government and the private sector, where their salaries are not being squeezed one against another. Now, for that woman to come in here and tell us that there was no compression, either she didn't know what the hell she was talking about, or she wasn't telling the truth. As a matter of fact, she made the statement 2 weeks before, I find out, at a political convention on the north side of Minneapolis, when asked if she wouldn't run for an office again, and they got down to saying, well, how about a legislative office, because we got a terrific spot for you. And her remark was, never run for that office because the salary is too low. Now, I don't know where she's coming from, but I don't think we're getting very much of a straight story when we hear there is compression, and, oh, yes, they don't need anything, but I wouldn't do it because they don't make enough money. There's something here that goes on that if you're here on behalf of the governor, okay, you're going to say what he tells you to say. I guess that's the case. Rather than what we should be doing, and that is, I'm really surprised. You know, the first thing I asked when I came to this meeting was if we were elected or appointed or however we got on this council on behalf of some person or persons, or were we to carry out their bidding. And I think that I have found my answer in what has been going on here. That's my feeling on it.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DIRTA language.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Is there additional discussion?
Questions?
No, Mr. Stanek.
Mr. DIRTA, just a question for you. First of all, thanks for putting this together. I think this might be the best information we come out of this council with, quite frankly. If the legislature were not to develop the criteria, would this still work to better? I'm thinking that we would still be in a, or a future council would still be in a better position to have some information, but can you just comment?
If the policy were not established around the position of the state of Minnesota relative to the market, those two components were not done, then the second component of additional data in enough time to analyze it would tremendously improve the recommendation coming from this group.
Great.
But the long ball is that policy statement. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it boils down to the political and what the voter is going to say. Somewhere, reasonableness has to be defined and put into law.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. DIRTA, absent a legislative pronouncement, the future councils would be left with a situation where they'd have to determine where do we want to stand in terms
exactly.
of other states, et cetera. Thanks, and thanks for putting this together.
Is there additional discussion? If not, is there consensus on this?
Yes.
Correct. What a nice note on which to end. Is there other business?
Move to adjourn.
My favorite motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.